Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. We have a tantalizing show for you today, folks. I'm going to use the word tantalizing in a couple different ways because this is Thanksgiving. I want to say happy Thanksgiving to my entire family out there, not just my biological family, but you, my Darkness Radio family, and hope that you're having a very good Thanksgiving, whether you be by yourself, whether you be with a family that you've chosen, or whether you be with your family here on Darkness Radio. Maybe you're choosing to spend your Thanksgiving here listening to us today. Not only do we have a tantalizing menu today that we're sitting around the table and eating, but we have a tantalizing show for you today with a tantalizing subject. We're going to talk today about aliens. We're going to talk about the possibility of aliens, not just the possibility, but maybe probability. Well, we're going to talk today with our guest, John Gertz, who has a really, really good book out there called Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. I want to get into also as well, 3-Eye Atlas. We'll talk that a little bit today. And it's such a hot topic. And the pros and cons, is it a comet? Is it an actual craft? We'll get into that as well in the program. But we want to break down SETI a little bit today too in this the subject of this book, because it is entirely fascinating. Let me tell you a little bit about John before we bring him in here. John Gertz has been a driving force in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, or SETI, for more than 25 years. A recognized leader in the field, he served 3 terms as chairman of the board of the SETI Institute. John has also contributed to the academic foundation of SETI through multiple peer-reviewed theoretical papers. John founded a pioneering organization dedicated to raising $100 million for global SETI efforts, where he served as president alongside Vice President Frank Drake. That name's going to come up here in a little bit. The board included some of the most distinguished names in science, including Nobel laureates George Smoot and Charles Townes, and MacArthur Fellow Sarah Seeger. When Yuri Milner launched the $100 million Breakthrough Listener Initiative, John's leadership and vision were recognized with his appointment as the sole layman on its advisory board. Beyond his work in extraterrestrial research, John Gertz is the president and CEO of Zorro Productions, man after my own heart, where he has overseen numerous global adaptations of the iconic character, including The Mask of Zorro, Zorro the Musical, 12 TV series, and over 75 stage productions. He's collaborated with major talents such as Steven Spielberg, Isabel Allende, The Gypsy Kings, and Quentin Tarantino, with Django Zorro currently in development as a feature film with Sony. We may start there. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome into, for the first time, to Darkness Radio, John Gertz. John, how are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, Tim.
Okay, I got to ask you right off the bat, what is Django Zorro?
Well, honestly, it started off as a graphic novel. Unbeknownst to me, Quentin Tarantino was a fan of our monthly Zorro comic books. He contacted us with the idea of doing a mashup between his Django and our Zorro. He wrote it, a graphic novel. When he finished it, I took it to Sony Pictures, and they just fell off their chairs and said, hey, let's make a movie out of this. And so it's in development now at Sony Pictures.
Wow. I mean, I love Django Unchained. I love that movie. I mean, that's...
Yeah, this is... go get our graphic novel. I mean, it's really a fantastic piece of work, and we're pretty happy and proud of it. Anyway, I'm not here today to talk about Zorro. Let's talk aliens.
Oh, we will here in a second, but I got one more question here, John. Can I speculate then? Jamie Foxx and Antonio Banderas in the same room?
Is it possible to get them in the same room?
Yeah, to do this movie?
Yeah, I can't speak today about the casting. And my policy is until something is announced in the trades,
okay,
Variety, Hollywood Reporter, I don't say anything.
All right.
And so
I'm just trying to break some news here, John. That's all. That's all. You know, I got to try.
I always let the studio make the first announcement.
Okay. All right. With that, we can move on to SETI. Give us a little bit of background, how you become involved with SETI to begin with.
Well, honestly, I have always been interested in deep areas like cosmology, astrophysics. Actually, my original field of study was the study of comparative mythology and religion, viewed psychoanalytically through a Jungian perspective, and so on. But I've always been interested in these big questions of existence, which of course leads to the question of, are we alone in the universe? Well, okay, I'm not the only person who's had this question or whatever, but I have the dumb luck of living in Berkeley, California, which was a hotbed and it still is a hotbed of SETI research. It's one of the world centers. And my wife at the time, when she was an undergraduate at UC Berkeley, did some babysitting for a woman named Jill Tarter. Jill Tarter is one of the great founders of SETI. She was the person with whom on whom Carl Sagan based his novel Contact and became the
Yes.
Jodie Foster character in that movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she invited Jill over for dinner to my house, our home at that time, with her husband, who was the head of the radio astronomy program at UC Berkeley. Through dinner, I think they got a very good sense that I actually had a good layman's understanding of their field. And one thing led to another, and I eventually became invited onto the board of the SETI Institute in Mountain View, California. And Jill was the head SETI scientist at that time. I served on that board for about a dozen years, including 3 terms as its chairman. And so that's eventually I became interested in the theoretical underpinnings of SETI and realized that I could really bring something new and unique to the field. Because I'm not just a research scientist, I'm a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur, and I have to think in ways that businessmen think, and try to ask simple questions like, what would ET's best strategy be for contacting us? Would it be to send signals from their home planet to our home planet, which is the current SETI paradigm and has been the paradigm from the beginning, to go look at stars one by one by one by one and look for artificial signals. And I looked at that and said, that's daft. That's nutty. That's not the way ET would do it at all. It makes no strategic sense. And we can get into that if you like. And that became the basis of a lot of the writings that I did.
I do want to tip my cap to you because you do this. You do take logic and you do take that salesman type approach, like you say, and you say, you know what? Let's take into effect reality, and that's this: aliens are going to be, and they should be across the galaxy, right? If we're taking reality into effect, if they're not, and I'm going to throw this monkey wrench at you a little bit later here, John. And that's this. If they're not just a step to the left in another dimension on this plane, in this planet, okay? And I'm gonna bring up an example later in the program, and I want to throw this. As I was reading your book, there was an example that came to mind, and it's actually in your backyard. That I went, wait a minute, did this ever come up when you were writing the book? But I'm gonna stuff it for the second half of the program. But keeping in mind the example that you use throughout the book, that they're on the other side of the galaxy and it would take forever and a day to get here. So you're talking thousands of years to send a signal and bring a signal back, right? I mean, that's the idea.
Well, yes, they're limited by the speed of light just as we are. And
Right.
it doesn't matter that they're at the, well, I'm not even talking about the far end of the galaxy. Even the nearby star system is still very far away.
1500 years, right?
If the Kepler Space Telescope was looking at a field of stars were 1500 light years away. But that's only a fraction of the distance from one side of the galaxy to the other. One side of the galaxy to the other is about 100,000 light years.
Oof.
Now, let's take that 1500 light year distance, If we had radio transmitters, let's say, I'm going to say 3,000 years ago, and you follow me and humor me for a second. Of
Sure.
course, we didn't have transmitters 3,000 years ago, but what would we have sent ET? Think about it. Well, 3,000 years ago, we would have said, well, listen, here are our advanced mathematics. We can do addition and subtraction, and we haven't invented zero yet, but it will show you how to add and subtract. And then we'll show you our best architecture. We've got a ziggurat or a pyramid that look is look how tall it is, and it's made out of the best possible rocks you can find. And then we would tell them the secret of our great god Ra, the sun god. Okay, and so we send our message. It takes 1,500 years to get there. They send it back, send back their response, and they show us, hey, long division, okay, for mathematics. And they send us a picture of a diagram on how to pile up even more stones so that we can make our pyramids a little bit higher. And then excuse us for breaking the bad news to you guys, but a star is not actually a god. It's and of course it's useless information already. We already know this stuff. So the time lag is really important. Whatever we could send today to ET and have to wait 3,000 years to get a response at that distance would be kind of like beside the point.
And at this point, we might as well send him a Virginia Slims ad and say, "We've come a long way, baby," and because we're way past where we were 1,500 years ago, right?
Yep, exactly.
I mean, it's I get, and I was getting where you were coming at with the book. It's that if we're sending things that amount of distance, it's kind of not futile, right? But I get you also come a long way from that point in the book as well, where you start to suggest other things that maybe they've got an eye on us a little bit closer than just that faraway
Correct.
distance.
Now, if you look at it from ET's point of view, why would they send signals to us? First of all, they would have to dedicate a transmitter just to Earth. And do so for what, a billion years or 2 billion years? They have no idea when or if a civilization will arise on Earth. They've got to send a signal constantly to us with tremendous energy. I mean, the energy requirements of that transmitter would be humongous. Who's paying their electric bill? Okay, so have to ask stupid questions like this. Is there a cheaper way for them to send us information? As it turns out, there's a vastly cheaper way to send information. Okay, then you've got the huge problem of the coexistence of the civilizations in time. What if one civilization goes extinct? If they go extinct before we can receive their message, you've got the problem of lining up the two in time. Because our paradigm right now, our standard observing protocol is we look at each star for about 10 minutes. Okay, so what if they're sending signals to each star for every 10 minutes? Otherwise, they need a billion or more transmitters to dedicate one to each planet. So if they're doing that, if they're sending to each 10 to each planet for 10 minutes, we're listening to each star for 10 minutes. The chances of us lining up exactly at the same time in the exact same 10 minutes is essentially zero. Okay, so it's a dumb strategy. Their much better strategy is to send robotic probes to our solar system, load it up with whatever information they want to send us, put it on their version of a hard drive or a thumb drive or whatever, and then just send it, one and done. The civilization doesn't even have to live long enough. It can go extinct by the time that information arrives at us. And notably, it's much less dangerous. Well, there's no danger in sending that. ET, one of the main reasons why ET does not send signals from its own home star system is, Tim, it's dangerous. ET may have reason to know or suspect that there's some very bad actors out there in the galaxy. If you send signals, you're essentially telling everybody where you are. You're painting a target on yourself.
Right.
If you send a robotic probe, and we can talk about why it's robotic and not manned by little green men or something, but if you send a probe, that probe needn't reveal the coordinates of its of progenitor civilization, of the civilization that sent it. So we can come anonymously. And any ET that we ever encounter here, we may never learn where it's from. Okay? So for all these reasons, it makes much better sense. It's cheaper, it's not dangerous, and if you want to get into a conversation, that robotic probe can get into a conversation with Earth in near real time because it's at the distance of the moon or someplace else or on an asteroid. So it's within, light seconds or light minutes from Earth, not light years from Earth.
John, you bring up a really good point. I've had other guests on this program who have said things like, let's take for example, and I'm gonna take a big, huge leap here, and I'm gonna jump both feet into the pool here. That they've said, we think the Greys are actually robotic sentient. They're sentient robots. They're not really aliens themselves. We think they're actually robotic constructs. The Greys, yes. Yeah.
Greys, Greys, Greys.
Yes, gray aliens are actually robotic constructs.
Okay. But I don't know anything about the gray aliens.
Okay, but the reason they say this is this, because the way they operate, the way they move, the way they're very cold, the fact that they carry out the same experiments over and over and over again, to them it seems like just to them it seems like maybe they're carrying out a program. Okay, they're not really. If they do communicate, it's through telepathy or a mind communication, right? So it seems to me that you're right on the money here, that whatever's being sent, these are sentries, these grays are sentries, they're robotic. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit to where I was going to go in the second half of the program. But the recent video that came out, that the U.S. government came out, where they took a shot at a craft, this craft that they tried to shoot down with a missile that actually split into pieces and then came back together, looked like it was, for lack of a better term, it was a probe, right? I mean,
Well, look,
oh, go ahead, go ahead.
let me respond to this. So I said a few seconds ago, I slipped in a few seconds ago that I've never heard of grays. I don't know what grays are. Let me give you some very bad news, but on the other side of the very bad news is actually very, very good news.
Okay.
The bad news, let me get it right out of the way, is that I have no idea what you're talking about with the grays. Okay. The reason is I'm not a UFO guy. I'm not one of you. Okay.
Okay.
And that's the bad news. Let's get it out of the way.
All
Okay.
right.
I don't know any more about UFOs and UAPs than I read in the newspapers or I saw on 60 Minutes or something.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Now, with that new bad news out of the way, let me give you the good news. The good news is I come from an entirely different perspective. I come from the perspective of astronomy. Astronomy begins where the atmosphere ends. UFOs, UAPs, they're part of the atmosphere. I don't study them. They're not my beat. Okay?
Okay.
Nevertheless, as an astronomer that has nothing to do with the UFO community, I've basically come to a conclusion that is extremely supportive of your followers or your UFO people, and that is that ET's best strategy is not to send signals from its home planet, but rather to send craft here. And that if we're going to, only given that ET exists and wants to communicate, that we're going going to find them here in our own solar system, not somewhere else. It's pointless for us to be looking with our telescopes at star systems far, far away. We should be scanning our own solar system and trying to find them right here amongst us.
Have you seen the recent video that was out maybe 2 months ago of the craft that the U.S. forces tried to shoot down?
Nope.
You haven't? Oh,
No,
well, then this is.
seriously. I'm a mainstream media kind of guy.
Well,
Okay.
this was on mainstream
Okay. I haven't
media.
seen. I haven't seen it on the news,
Okay, well, I got to send you
but
the
it
clip
appears on
then.
the front page of the New York Times,
It
or
was
appears on the front page of the Washington Post. I will see it.
NBC News. It was on NBC News. It was mainstream news, John. This the U.S. government comes out and admits they shot this craft.
I'll take your word for it. I missed it.
Yeah, it made mainstream news. The only problem is it didn't shake anybody. It didn't surprise anybody.
It doesn't surprise everybody because that's because too many people have cried wolf too many times that when something real happens, and this is a big problem. Well, you were going to ask me about 3-1 Atlas. Or
Yeah,
three eye, excuse me, three
three-eye
eye
atlas,
atlas.
right? Yeah.
I know Avi Loeb has been running around saying it's a spacecraft,
Yes,
okay?
and now Michio Kaku is backing him.
Unfortunately
Yeah.
for Avi Loeb, he's been saying that about lots of things,
Yes.
and so he loses credibility, so he just cries wolf too often, and then it's hard to anybody take him seriously at this point, so that's kind of the problem that the entire UFO community has with people like myself, or just that essentially, in order to get to the kernels or the meat of the matter, which is really, you just have to go through so many husks that it's unfortunately, some of us just lose attention.
Have you been keeping an eye on Three-Eye Atlas and in what it's been doing as it rounds the sun?
I'm sorry, have I seen it or
Have
did,
you been keeping an eye on it and what it's been doing as it's been rounding the sun? Because reports are that it had a very short tail. Now the tail is seeming to grow on it. It seems like
which is,
it's forming
yeah,
more of a
it's,
traditional
it,
comet now.
yeah, it's a comet.
Yeah,
It's a
yeah,
comet.
yeah.
From the very beginning, we could tell it was a comet. It's doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing as a comet. Therefore, it's irresponsible to suggest that it's a spacecraft masquerading as a comet or something. No, it's a, I be firmly believe that ET is right here in our own solar system with robotic probes, but that doesn't make every snowball or a comet into a spacecraft, or any asteroid or a piece of rock, is just a piece of rock. It's not a spacecraft.
So why then, John, would the U.S. government talk about pulling cameras or pulling spacecraft off of one mission to point it at this thing that's obviously a comet to see if it's a ship?
Oh no, it's not a question of seeing whether it's a ship. Although, frankly, now that Avi Loeb claims it's a ship, everybody wants to point their cameras and prove otherwise. Okay, there are a lot of people there. A lot of people out there are more than happy to slap Avi down, But more importantly, it is, even though it's just a comet, it's not an ordinary comet. It's a comet from another star system. And so it is different than our comets. And it's in that difference that's our best way of studying material from another planetary system, who knows where from. It could have been coursing through the galaxy for the last billion years. We don't know where it's originally from, and we will never know where it was originally from. But nonetheless, it is an alien comet, and that in itself is worthy of study. So everybody who's got a camera or a telescope that can point at it is happy to do so.
Is there a chance that no matter how minute it is, that it's carrying some form of life on it? whether it be
You can
bacteria.
never disprove. That's a statement that can be never disproven. So is there a chance? Of course, there's a chance, but but how can you prove it? You can't. It's gone. Okay, and that was the problem with Oumuamua, the first one that Avi claimed was a spacecraft. By the time we got a look at it, it was already moving out of the solar system, and our best data on it was only a few pixels. Anybody can see whatever they want in a blur, okay? And for a few pixels, you can weave some grand, theory of it's a spacecraft, but it showed no. It didn't smell pass the smell test whatsoever. It was a rock.
Well, Avi
Okay.
claimed Oumuamua had a sail on it and everything. I mean, he claimed that
Yeah,
thing.
well, yeah, but you'd have to go through such what's known in science as special pleadings. I've seen his work on that, and you have to really twist yourself like a Rube Goldberg device to see how it would work as a solar sail. Okay. For one thing, it was tumbling. All observers agree that it was tumbling erratically. How does a south solar sail work when it's tumbling? Okay. When it's not pointed at anything. In terms of its shape, it could be either a flat pancake shape or a cigar shape and so on. And I urge you to look at Ultima Thule. What's Ultima Thule? It's an object in the Kuiper belt beyond Pluto, okay, that New Horizons photographed, our spacecraft that photographed Pluto also photographed this large body in the Kuiper belt. And as we're far away from it, and its first glimpse of it really looked exactly like a cigar. Okay. As New Horizons got closer and got a better vision of it, what do you know? It's two snowballs basically, attached together, and they both look like flattened pancakes. But you could, but you as you as New Horizons got really close to it, you get a very good picture of it as two asteroids or two comets stuck together. Okay.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, look up NASA's pictures or New Horizons pictures of Ultima Thule is the name of it.
We'll do. We'll do. Most definitely. I tell you what, we're coming close to a break here. Actually, let's take our break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about SETI, and we'll talk a little bit about a principle out there that you believe maybe should be thrown to the wayside. We'll talk about that. I also want to talk about what METI is and why you're opposed to METI. And we'll talk a little bit about how we should, if we do run into aliens, how we should approach it. And let's talk a little bit about as well, I know as our time is starting to shorten up here, John, we'll talk a little bit about we'll talk about engagement with aliens, if we do have an engagement with aliens. And then I teased as well that there was, if aliens aren't physically coming from the other side of the universe to here, was there another way that they could show up? And had they shown up here? There's a movie out there that came out a couple of years ago that we actually had not only reviewed, but had the filmmakers here, that they filmed off the coast of, I believe it was Monterey, California, that showed these Tic Tac ships slipping in through a portal. From almost like from another dimension, they just kind of drop in, and it's almost like they were not only USOs that came in from the sea or under the sea, but they slipped in from a portal in the sky. So they kind of come out of the sky, but it's almost like a rip in the sky. So they kind of just slip in through this rip in the sky, and you see all these Tic Tacs come out.
Okay, and somebody took a picture of it?
They got it, but they got it through infrared camera.
Who's the they?
There's a team of scientists. So it was a team of scientists that sat out there, and I think it was for a week. No, not a week. It was a month. They had rented a house. I'll have to get the name of the the name of the movie, and I'll do that during the break. And we had them on the show here, and we talked about the documentary, What's
Yeah,
that?
I want to leap in here and tell you one of my pet peeves about that movie. That's why I asked you who took the film and so on. And you said some scientists on a beach. Okay. Whenever you get these kinds of videos or single cameras taking shots of purported alien ships, my question is, how come it's just one camera? Okay.
Oh no,
And
there
that's
were
what
multiple
when
cameras.
Well, check that out. If it's multiple cameras from multiple independent observers, that's the key thing. So, for example, when there was a meteor that streaked across the sky in the southeast a few months back, it was caught on hundreds, if not thousands, of dash cams. There were innumerable videos of it from independent observers. That's what we're missing in the UFO community. Independent observers taking pictures from multiple angles that they're strangers to one another. They have no reason to collude with one another, make up evidence. They're 40 strangers to one another sitting in window seats in an aircraft that all take out their phones and see the same thing. That's what we're missing in the UFO community. When you bring forth that kind of evidence, that's going to catch my attention.
The name of
Single camera by single observers or single witnesses, not so much.
the movie was A Tear in the Sky. That was the name of it. Caroline Corey was the filmmaker. And it had won multiple film festival awards. It was more than just a couple of cameras. It was it, she put together a team of scientists. I just had to go back to the show description. They caught they went off of basically they went off the initial UFO UAP Navy Tic Tac video, and then they went to that same spot in Monterey, and they looked with infrared. They took infrared cameras out. And they noticed and they filmed from multiple spots along the coast with these different infrared cameras. They took one team of scientists here, one team of scientists here, one team of scientists on this side of the coast. And they filmed all at that same spot. And they caught, gosh, I can't tell you how many ships coming out of the same portal. It's a fascinating movie, John. Fascinating movie. And they're coming out of this portal in the sky. You can't see them with the naked eye because they filmed with the regular camera. They filmed with an infrared camera. They filmed with different spectrums of light, but it was the infrared camera that caught these ships coming out of the portal. I don't know why infrared caught them. I don't know if they were cloaked. I don't know what the situation was, but it's only when they choose to reveal themselves that you're able to see these things.
Or it could have been a flock of birds also giving off an infrared signature. Birds will do that the closer in. They're heat generators, birds.
I don't know.
Body
Like I said,
temperature.
I can send you the link for the movie if you want to see it. But it's yeah,
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
it's interesting.
All
It's
right. You
interesting.
want to go to break?
Yeah, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk SETI, we'll talk METI, and we'll talk about engagement with aliens and what John believes we should do if we engage with these things. We'll talk about that when we come back. The name of the book, which is available right now, and I encourage you to go get it, is called Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. More with John Gertz when we come back right here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Morning. Coffee and a can of Husky Fine Cut Natural.
Same as always.
Really? Husky dip.
Yeah, costs less, but it doesn't taste like it. Barrel-aged American-grown tobacco. Top quality for a fair price. What else can you ask for? Have a good one, bud.
Well, shoot. I'll take a can of Husky, too.
Find it at your nearest retailer. It's hard to beat Husky. Not all varieties available in all geographies. Warning, this product is not a safe alternative to cigarettes.
My place in tech changes every day. But I don't fear the future. Because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself. At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more. My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself. My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself. Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. My guest is John Gertz. The name of the book, Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. We have a link in the description of this program so that you can pick up this book. Again, really good book, folks. I encourage you to get it. John covers everything from the mission of SETI to not only that, but different... you cover almost every scenario here, John. Everything from how we would handle engaging ET. Everything from the mission of SETI, sending out these signals, how SETI goes about different things, funding for SETI, the types of ways we try to communicate with these beings. What would happen if we communicate with these beings and actually make contact, what we should do. There's what if scenarios in here. And I want to talk about some of those what if scenarios here in the second part of the program. You've pointed out, and we've talked a little bit about the fact that these beings probably wouldn't make one-on-one contact with us. It'd probably be robotic. It probably wouldn't be a live being, but there's,
well, it might be alive, but it's post-biological. That is to say, it would be silicon-based, not carbon-based. It's desperately difficult for squishy beings like ourselves to do interstellar travel. The support systems are absolutely overwhelming. Silicon systems don't have that problem. But in terms of it being alive, I think it would... meet a lot of definitions of what is life. Certainly sentient life would pass what we would call the Turing test. If you were talking to it, you wouldn't be able to tell that it was not a squishy being like ourselves. It's like an advanced AI system on a telephone. We already are beginning to have these nowadays. Mm-hmm. We talk to someone on the telephone and not even realize it's a robot you're talking to. Yeah, but technology is getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
Well, you can talk about that, times many fold when you're dealing with a robotic intelligence that's alien.
I had a listener I was talking to, and told him I was going to be talking to you today, he asked me an interesting question. And I thought I knew the answer, but the more I thought about it, I don't. He's over in England. And he asked me the question. And, you know, more I think about it, I don't think I know the answer. And that's this. With the James Webb telescope, he said, you know, you can look across the galaxy and look at all these different planets. How come you can't communicate with it? And I said, well, it's a telescope, right? You look with it. You don't communicate with it.
Correct. But that's correct. The James Webb telescope, like most telescopes, are one-way devices. There are a few radio telescopes that that can both receive signals and transmit signals, the most prominent of which was called Arecibo in Puerto Rico, that was, you know, owned by the United States, but it collapsed a few years back into a pile of rubble. It was at the time, the largest single dish radio telescope in the world. And it was able to transmit signals really quite far across the galaxy. It had that capability.
Now tell people, and I know from reading it, but tell people why a laser isn't as effective as RF energy to transmit across the universe.
Oh, no, a laser is quite good at transmitting information. It's a very, very efficient carrier of information. The problem with it is, well, several fold, but one is, the biggest one is that the universe is not transparent, completely transparent. There's dust in the galaxy. Okay, the dust coalesces sometimes to form stars. Now the dust is very, very thin, but it does exist. So it's a little bit like a projector in a movie theater years ago when people smoked in movie theaters. You know, the smoke would get in the way of the film transmitted from the projection booth. Well, imagine that the projection booth was not, you know, 100 feet or from the screen, but 100 miles from the screen. Okay, sooner or later, each photon from the projector would bang into a molecule of smoke and get absorbed. And by the time you got to the screen, it would be a black screen. Mm-hmm. So within about 1,000 light years or so, there's a diminution, depending which direction you're pointing the telescope, of roughly 50% of the photons of lasers. Not so with radio, that is for which the dust is not an issue. It goes right through. So that's the problem with lasers. But lasers over shorter distances are very efficient carriers of information.
So there's no...
As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why we may be not hearing from ET, and let's say that I'm wrong and ET is sending signals from its home planet, but it may be sending signals using lasers that are more efficient than light lasers, and those would be X-ray lasers or high ultraviolet lasers, but those wouldn't penetrate our atmosphere. But ET would reason, what kind of stupid primitive civilization would put their receivers, their telescopes, at the bottom of a thick atmosphere instead of in outer space or in the far side of the moon? So, you know, it would be not considering that our telescopes are at the bottom of the thick atmosphere and can't see the X-ray lasers.
That brings up my next question, which is this. Is there a way that maybe we aren't communicating that's maybe above our pay grade or that we're not thinking of? You know, we're still communicating in RF or radio waves or maybe in lasers or in other technology. Is there a technology out there that we're not thinking of?
Look, I mean, 300 years ago, if we wanted to send a message to ET, we would have used our best form of communication would have been smoke signals. That was, you know, nobody had discovered yet the electromagnetic spectrum, you know. So is that Possible, of course. All we know about right now for sending signals really is the electromagnetic spectrum. We have no substitute, even in theory, right now for the electromagnetic spectrum.
I wonder, you know how we assume everybody operates on our wavelength. You know what I mean? Like I'll give you it. I like to call it the traveler's conundrum here, John. Right? Or the American perspective. Right? When we go to a foreign country, we assume everybody knows everything we know. Our customs, the food we eat, and the music we listen to. And oh yeah, that's Britney Spears. Don't you know Britney Spears? And then someone in China has no idea what Britney Spears is, or they don't know, you know, they don't know what a kolachki is or whatever. I wonder if that, and I think you bring this up as well in the book as far as language goes, as far as communication barriers and even getting to know if we were to have a face to face, whatever, with whatever this is, we'd be like this. We'd be butting heads.
Well, Tim, I mean, you're absolutely right that if they were communicating from their own home system, they wouldn't have a clue of how to communicate with us. They may, them among themselves, speak in something akin to the belly waggles of a bee or the colors of a cuttlefish or something, but they wouldn't have any idea how to talk to us. Their best strategy, though, is to come here and surveil us. And from that surveillance, they would learn our languages from Sesame Street, our maths from Khan Academy. They'd get all the rest from YouTube or TikTok, and then when they do open up a channel of communication with us, it might be in the Queen's own English or in Hindu, in Urdu or Mandarin or something like that, So, that's one of the many reasons why they're here and not over there. They're in our solar system right now, surveilling us.
Yeah, I just, I really do think at times we're way too insulary, we're way too into ourselves. I don't want to say the word narcissistic, I won't say that, but we really are into ourselves so much that we don't think about, well, I really want to learn to speak alien, or I really want to learn their language. It would take us way too long to try and learn how they speak rather than them trying to assimilate our language. I really do think they'd probably pick it up faster than we'd pick their language up.
Your guess is as good as mine. I really don't know. Okay. really remarkably, we know next to nothing about ET. We do know some things. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I say next to nothing, I mean next to nothing. We don't know if they can learn languages better than we can. We don't. One of the key things that we don't know is anything. We don't know anything about their intentions. We don't know if they're coming here to aggress against us, to save us, to trade with us, to proselytize, or just lay down the law. We have no idea. But one thing that we do know about ET, for an absolute fact, is that whatever ET we encounter will be absolutely eons more advanced than us. Mm-hmm. And the reason I can say that with complete certainty is that the universe is 13.8 billion years old. The first rocky planets that could harbor life were about a billion years after that. Okay, so now you're up to 12.8 billion years ago, let's call it 13 billion years ago to get, rough and dirty on it. Let's say it also that we're average and it took us 4.55 years. The Earth has been here. It's taken that long for us to become technological. It's for a technological civilization to arise on planet Earth. If that's kind of average, then you're looking at from 13, you subtract another 4 or 5, and you're maybe in the area of 9 billion years ago would have been the first alien civilization to arise. Well, that's twice the age of the Earth. That's a long head start. Yeah. That's a really long head start. And, so the chances of us, with all the civilizations that could have arisen in the last 8 or 9 billion years, that we're going to encounter another civilization like ourselves that is also in the very first 100 years or so of being able to send and receive lasers or radio signals is essentially zero.
Yeah, yeah. There are a couple of equations. One equation that I teased we were going to talk about when I mentioned the name Frank Drake. There's the Drake equation out there. Explain to me what the Drake equation is. And along with, we've talked about Fermi's paradox before here on the show. We did a whole show on it, so we're familiar with it. But explain to me how the Drake equation and Fermi's paradox, how both of them, explain to me first what the Drake equation is, and then tell me how both the Drake equation and Fermi's paradox are kind of keeping us from finding ET and maybe even having a meeting with him.
Frank Drake was the grandfather of SETI. He conducted the very first SETI experiment in the year 1960, and then went on to devise the Drake equation in 1961, a year later, when he had trying to organize a conference with Carl Sagan, the first SETI conference. And Frank was a dear friend of mine. We worked very closely together at the SETI Institute. He also was a chairman of the SETI board before me. And he wrote this equation that tried to answer the question, how many civilizations are out there? And it became a very, very big deal, it's been said, and I think correctly, that it's the second most famous equation in all of science, next to E equals MC squared. I can't think of a more famous equation. I can't find anybody else who has a better idea of what would be. It really is very, everybody knows what the Drake equation is. It answers the question of N, the number of civilizations in our galaxy. And what it does is it just multiplies out some factors, the rate of star formation, how many stars have planets, how many of those planets are Earth-like, how many of those planets have life that arise on them, how many planets of that, what fraction of that life becomes intelligent or technological or communicative life, and so forth, and how long that life exists, and it gives you an answer. Okay. Mm-hmm. I write a chapter in my book that takes it apart factor by factor and comes to the conclusion that that equation is absolutely well nigh ready for the ash heap of history. It's doing more to obscure the subject than to enlighten us. Anyway, I regret to say, listen, my book is written for laymen. Okay, it's published by Oxford University Press, which is a very prestigious academic press. Mm-hmm. But I didn't write it for academics. I didn't write it for fellow astronomers, even though the astronomy professors who reviewed it for Oxford said that they would either assign it or recommend it to their students. Actually, I wrote it for the general public, mm-hmm. and that's why I think it's written with some humor and some fun, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm a layman, and I wrote it for other laymen because I'm trying at the end of the day to wake people up and say, listen, ET's here. We're not prepared. We got to get our act together as a world, never mind as the United States. And so my idealized reader is maybe a 30-something-year-old congressional staffer. You know, mm-hmm. I'm trying to influence public policy, and for that reason, I'm writing for the general public, you know, to get people up in arms and realize any day now, ET can open up a channel of communication with us, and we are completely flummoxed. We'll be dealing on the fly, you know, having in a state of complete befuddlement instead of having contingency plans and proper thinking about the subject, and not just by astronomers. Let's perish that thought. I mean, we've got to form a committee of experts that comprised of diplomats, military experts, emergency planners, linguists, cryptologists, lawyers, behavioral biologists, evolutionary biologists, and game theorists. And I can think of many other disciplines that need a seat at the table. Just sure. Let's, you know, right now it's just us astronomers who are doing all the thinking, and that's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, Why shouldn't only astronomers be doing SETI? I mean, why aren't archaeologists and geologists getting into the field? Maybe ET was here at some point. Maybe still is here. I don't know. But well, nobody's studying it with any particular rigor. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Let me ask you this, John, and again, just a couple more here before we leave people today. In the book, and I'll just kind of tease this. And again, I want people to go get this book because there's so much stuff here that people need to read. You tell people where to find ET when you're looking out in the night sky, when we're looking through telescopes, when SETI's looking through telescopes, where to find them. You tell people different things about the research and scientific proof of the existence of extraterrestrials. The one thing, and you've just alluded to it, about people working together and groups working together to not only find ET, but once ET comes to us, about working together to establish contact and maintain contact. But you also talk about the U.S. working with the UN in conjunction with each other and the world working together as a unit. My question to you as we begin to wrap things up here is that maybe a little bit of Pollyanna thinking here, considering where we're at as a world? Do you really think that ET is a uniting force for the world, that we could get together over that subject?
We need to. I don't. Listen, I'm no big fan of the United Nations. Unfortunately, it's all we've got at the moment. Because, look, the alternative could be tremendous problems. Let me give you two
sure.
quick hypotheticals.
Yep.
Let's say that I'm correct and that ET's right here and will open up a line of communication with us in English or in Mandarin or something as soon as it finishes surveillance. The day comes and we get the message from a probe at the distance of the moon or something, which says, "Hi everybody, I'm glad to meet you. We've been surveilling you and we're not all that happy with what we see on the nightly news down there. But on the other hand, we liked Forrest Gump and we think maybe you guys are redeemable. So we're going to give you the great wisdom of Encyclopedia Galactica and all the technologies and stuff that we have to give you. It's right here on our hard drive or whatever it is up here in the probe. Come and get it, bring it down, it's all yours." Well, wait a second here. Who's going to retrieve it? Is it going to be a race now between the Chinese and NASA with Elon Musk acting on his own, all racing to get there? And let's say the Americans get there first, will the Chinese be incentivized to shoot down the returning American spacecraft, lest that we gain a huge technological leap over them with this cornucopia of new knowledge? We've got to sit down now, think this stuff out, come to some reasonable solutions. And so on. That's why I, in my book, I even draft an international treaty and suggest a first draft of a treaty. It's the closing chapter of my book of how we might cooperate together, because in the lack of cooperation, we're in a world of trouble. Let me give you another hypothetical.
Sure.
Let's say that I'm wrong and that in the classic SETI protocol is correct, and we receive a signal from another star 100 light years from now. No, 100 light years away, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the signal says the same thing. "Hi, everybody. We're here. If you're there, signal us back and we'll send you in the Encyclopedia Galactica." Okay. What do we do? Do we send back a signal? Now, you think that's an obvious answer, but it's not so obvious. I mean, what if that is like that is a malicious civilization, and that message they sent us like a bat doing echolocation. They're locating their prey. So it's a coin toss. I don't know. I honestly don't know. But what I do know is that I don't have the right myself. And this is what you were going to ask me about Medi, but I don't have that right to make that decision for all mankind. Somebody's got to, it's got to be done by the United Nations. But is it by a two-thirds vote, three-quarters vote? Is it the General Assembly, the Security Council? Who gets to make that decision? I have no idea. It's never been discussed. Okay. But we need to discuss that now. We can't discuss that later after the fact. Why?
Yeah.
Because ET, if they're doing the same thing we're doing, they're pointing to this star for 10 minutes and that star for 10 minutes, and they keep sending this message, you know, come give us a response and we'll send you Encyclopedia Galactica. And so they may, how long are they going to wait for our response? 10 minutes? As adjusted by the speed of light, 10 minutes, 10 hours, 10 days, 10 centuries, who knows? Our only possible rational thing to do is prepare what we're going to say now, take the vote if we're going to send a response, and be ready there and hit the send button the moment we hear something, if that was the decision of mankind to, in fact, to post a response.
So... is there, well, I suppose we're getting a little deep in the weeds if I ask this question, but is there a safe response to a hunter that's willing to wait no matter how long to capture their prey? Is there a safe response to put out there if it is a trap? Do you just say, you know, thanks, but no thanks?
No, there's no safe response. The one of the main reasons why we may not be hearing anything from the stars, you know, because to Fermi's paradox, or one of the main answers to Fermi's paradox, is that everybody's scared, and they may be scared for good reasons. You know, that they know something that maybe we don't know, that there are really some bad actors out there, and transmitting out to the universe could be suicidal.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. It's true.
But transmitting through probes is not, because if we communicate with the probe, it opens up a communication with us. The probe doesn't tell us where it's from, but it can send signals back and do so through a galactic internet. But you have to read my book on how I structure that.
Right.
And there may be an entire galactic internet.
I fear, and again, I'll offline, I'll send you the clip of that of us firing on that craft. It's alarming. It's alarming when you see it. It's very alarming because this craft.
Please, Tim, definitely do send it to me. I'm interested.
It breaks into four, and then the four pieces keep flying. In the missile, it skips right off the craft and keeps going. It just bounces off the bulkhead, and it does break it into four pieces, but the four pieces keep going. I'm telling you, John, we're not going to do any damage to anything. We can't do damage to these things. We just can't.
Right. And unfortunately, they could do damage to us.
Yeah.
Some of the, you were going to ask me about Medi, but
oh, yeah, that's
transmitting to the stars. Why should we not do transmit to the stars? And I say it's dangerous, and they come back and they say, oh no, it's not dangerous. I mean, how could they hurt us from that great distance? And then I said, well, that's spoken like a true Hittite. You know, what's a Hittite? Hittites lived like, you know, how many years ago? 3,000, 4,000 years ago or whatever. You know, the Hittites couldn't imagine warfare at a distance beyond the distance that their arrows could fly, you know? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they couldn't imagine bombers and missiles and, you know, and drones and tanks and on. You know, it's a complete failure of our imagination to believe that ET cannot hurt us from afar if it chose to.
Yeah, it you know, I sat there and I watched, like I said, I was watching NBC News, and they when they came on and they said an unbelievable clip that the government's released of this. I believe it was of fighter jets that were coming off a Navy warship, and they fired on this unidentified craft, and it broke into four pieces, and it just kept flying. I was in shock. And they showed it. They showed it more than once. And I went and watched it online after I had seen it on television because I wanted to see it for myself. We played it here on this show. We posted the link for it so people could watch it. I had people send it to me and say, have you seen this? Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. And they said, what do you think of it? And I said, I don't know what to think. I just know it. I just know this much. Those guys that fired on that ship are darn lucky. They're darn lucky that thing didn't turn around and return fire because they wouldn't be here. I got to think that thing has offensive capabilities as well as defensive, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
right.
We can't tell you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got to think it's got some sort of weapons, but in that case, thank goodness that it chose not to exercise them, right?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Right. So, and unless, like you stated, and you state in the book, maybe that is a robotic probe, and it's just there to observe, and we just happen to fire off one on a robotic probe that was there to observe.
Yeah, I mean, it's so desperately difficult for squishy beings to make it across interstellar space. I mean, you know, just to go to the nearest star system at the speed of Voyager, our fastest, you know, Voyager, or other fast spacecraft that have already left our solar system. Basically, four spacecraft have already left our solar system. Two Voyagers, two Pioneers, and New Horizons is now on its way out of our solar system. And at those speeds, it would take approximately 4,000 generations to get to the nearest star system. Okay. Yeah. That would be every single generation of whom would be born, live their entire lives, and die of old age on that spaceship. And only the first and last would not. And the failure points for that kind of mission are so astounding. Every single, since there's no possible way to get resupplied, every atom would have to be recycled endlessly with near perfection. Yeah, where are they getting their food from? Obviously, there would have to be a huge acreage of inside this world ship to grow for everybody. What about manufacturing? I mean, if you go into, you know, your bathroom or my bathroom, there's a toothbrush and toothpaste and a glass and some pharmaceuticals and a hairbrush and so forth. So you need a toothbrush factory, a toothpaste factory, pharmaceuticals, you know, factories, you know, and on and on. I mean, this is, it just staggers the imagination of all the failure points, all the life support systems that would have to work perfectly for tens of thousands of years. You know, it's that no virus or bacteria would mutate in the wrong direction, that populations would have to remain exactly stable, that people would remember their mission for over all these generations, such that, you know, in one generation, all the computer scientists aren't burned at the stake as heretics or something like this by a new religion that had come up. You know, our society has never remained stable over that kind of tenure. Languages morph. Who's going to read the owner's manuals? You know, after the languages are completely changed. You know, and so it's virtually impossible, in my judgment, for squishy beings like us to make that kind of trip.
For us, we couldn't make that trip. On the other side of it, from their side of it, are you not a believer in wormholes or in the scientific possibility of a wormhole, of them being able to go across the galaxy very quickly in something like that?
I'm only going to be able to stick to the science that we know.
Okay.
So you've asked me already if there are means of communications outside the electromagnetic spectrum. Not that I know of. Not that we know of.
Yeah.
Same thing with travel. Yes, wormholes are are theoretically possible, but all of our physicists who have looked at it think that it can't really be practically implemented.
Okay.
You would be ripped apart as you went through one and spaghettified, made into spaghetti, you know, if you tried to get through it. So at this moment, at the state of our science, we'd have to say, no, there's no other way. And the same thing with multiple dimensions. You know, we do know about our four dimensions. We suspect string theory tells us that there could be 10 dimensions, or some theories, 11 dimensions in total. Where those dimensions are, how they're curled up inside and so on is still completely mysterious to us. We don't know. Is it possible that they're traveling in another dimension and so forth? Not by the science that we currently know.
Okay.
You know, that's all I can stick with. You guys can go to science fiction if you want, but I have to stick in my job. Right. I have to stick to what's actually known.
Right. You have to practice science fact, not science fiction. I get that.
That's my limitation.
That's right. Well, that's not a limitation. It's fact. Yeah. You have to practice what you preach, right?
Indeed.
Exactly. John, I want to thank you so much for being with us. The book is Reinventing SETI, New Directions in the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And I again, folks, I encourage you to pick it up. We have a link in the description of this program. John, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us here on Thanksgiving.
Tim, it was a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
Pleasure is all mine. Folks, we're not done yet. We're gonna turn our attention now. I'm going to bring in a special guest. Right now, we're going to join Scotty Rorick. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Scotty Rorick. All right, for the second part of the program, I got a friend with me. And I want to emphasize, because it is Thanksgiving, that I want to emphasize an attitude of gratitude. I think we kind of lose that on the Thanksgiving holiday. So I had a funny thing happen recently. So in my personal life, as you guys know, I'm a pretty brittle diabetic. And recently, I had to get a hold of my Dexcom meter, which between you, me, and all of us friends here on the program, I lost my Dexcom meter a while back because it's got a loose port on it and it wouldn't charge properly. So power turns off on my Dexcom meter and I can't find it. It's lost to the wind somewhere. And I did travel with it. So I traveled to a couple of places and then I thought, well, was it in my bag? Was it in the house? Was it somewhere? I turned over and cleaned a lot of my house trying to find it. I could not find it. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, if I can't find it through natural means, maybe I can find it through supernatural means. And I'm thinking to myself, who would I get a hold of in order to try and find it through supernatural means? And sometimes when you do this, right, as a person who's been in this business, it will be 20 years now in January. You got to think. I didn't think really. What I did is I let myself feel rather than think. And I know to some of you, you may think that's woo-woo. But to me, I thought, you know what? I'm just going to calm down and I'm going to let it come to me. Who should I get a hold of? And automatically, boom, it took 2 seconds. Scotty Rorick. It just came to me. I'm going to get a hold of Scotty Rorick. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, he's been on the program before. And I was with him at the Palmer House for Potographs for Pooches, right? And believe it or not, before the name came to me, his face came to me. His face and then the name, Scotty Rorick. And I went, oh, of course, Scotty. In case you don't know, Scotty's a psychic medium whose mission is to bring spiritual understanding to people searching for answers. He works towards that mission through education, mediumship, and mentoring.
I do. Thanks for having me, Tim.
And here he is now.
Happy Thanksgiving, by the way.
Thank you. Now, I should explain to people here, Scotty. I want to give them the rest of the story here. So here's how this goes.
Go ahead.
And happy Thanksgiving to you as well. So I explained to Scotty the situation that this Dexcom meter was missing. It was the physical meter. Now, I have the app on my phone, okay? And I was under a little bit of a time deadline because as of yesterday, I needed that meter. Actually, I needed it as of Sunday because I had to have a couple of days worth of the meter readings. Reason being is that I needed them because I needed to re-up my meter for the next year for insurance. So I was under the gun, right? So I needed the physical meter. I also needed to switch out meters before the end of November for insurance purposes. Well, I was desperate. So I get a hold of Scotty and I say, Scotty, I need your help if you can help me. And I said, I've lost my meter. I have no idea where it is. And Scotty says to me, and I'm going to grab my phone here because I want to quote exactly what you said. I don't want to paraphrase. I want to quote here, Scotty, okay? Because I still have the thread here. And
I do.
and I said to him, you had asked me had I traveled recently, and I said, well, at first I was trying to think just the Palmer House. I said, well, wait a minute, I was in Kansas City. And you said,
no, it wasn't in Kansas City.
It wasn't in Kansas City. You said, I think it ended up in a bag. Could be trash. Unfortunately, I went, oh, no. And he said, I keep getting bag. And I said, like shopping bag? And you said, yes.
I said, I think I said even like Walmart bag.
Walmart. Yep. You said Walmart type.
I mean a gray bag.
I said, yes. And yeah. I said, okay, I'll look. And I said, I'm on my way to the dock. And you said, okay, cool. Now, when I get home, I walk into my bedroom and there's this portable, like it's like a clothes hanging type. I don't know how to describe it, but it looks like a
hanging rack. It's a portable clothes rack.
Thank you. It's a portable hanging rack. And for some reason or another, this thing has collapsed. I don't know why. There's no reason why it should. But on the bottom of it is where I put extra pillows and blankets and stuff. Okay. Now, if you're using a psychic eye or psychic vision, it looks like there's a bunch of garbage laying there. Right. And if this thing is collapsed, it looks like there's a bunch of garbage laying there, but on top of it,
I said, it's in garbage. I said, I don't know if it's in the house, but I said, I see it with garbage.
Right. With garbage. Right. But on top of that, there was an empty, what looks like an empty water box, okay? But it was an empty box that I was going to put clothes. I was going to, because I have my closet organized, but I was going to take out summer clothes and put them into that box, that empty box. Don't ask me why, Scotty. But in that box, and I took a picture so you could see it. This is the box right here, and I'm going to show audience on video what the box looks like. This is the box right here because I took it out, put it on the tub so you could see it, right? The box is an old empty box because I get water delivered every month. So it's not a fancy thing, folks. You can get water delivered for $15 from Amazon. And so I had this empty box I was going to put water in. In the box, here it is. It was a gray bag with a W on it. It's a Walgreens box, not a Walmart bag, but a Walgreens bag. So Scotty was on. It had a W on it. There it is.
Yep.
It's a bag. And underneath the bag.
And it was gray.
And underneath this bag, ta-da, there it is. My Dexcom meter. Why would my Dexcom meter be in an empty box? I didn't put it there. I swear to you, I did not put it there. The last time I had my Dexcom meter, it was sitting on my bathroom counter.
I don't know how it got there, but
I have an idea. Now, I'm not going to reveal it on the air how it got there. I know that somebody moved it. I'm not going to say who or how it got moved, but it, let's just say as the power was getting lower, it beeped quite often. I have a feeling somebody got pissed off and just threw it.
Probably. I mean, that's what makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah. But but I bow in your general direction as to, because you saw what looked like a garbage heap. You saw that gray bag. You saw it was right there.
And I'm glad you could find it though, but I kept saying to you as you were going to the doctor, I kept saying, I keep seeing the bag. It's in a bag.
Yeah.
And that's why I first thought, you know, with the garbage and stuff that could be out of the house. But then I thought, you know, it's somewhere there. It's in the bag by a bunch of garbage.
Yeah, by a bunch of garbage. And I walked in, and when I walked in the room and that thing was collapsed, I went, well, what kind of garbage heap is this? And then and then as I'm fixing everything, I went to grab the box. And when I grabbed the box, I heard, you know, when something is sliding inside a box, I heard this as it was sliding. And I went, what the hell is that? And I lifted up the bag and there it was.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. I let out a son of a bitch. But then as I let that out, I went, oh, thank God. Thank everybody. Thank you, Scotty. Because I was overjoyed. It was one of those, you know, because I had worked so hard the day before to try and find it. I mean, I overturned the house trying to find this thing.
Right.
And couldn't find it. And I mean, just like that, boom, there it is.
That's the coolest thing about the gifts when you can do remote viewing like that and help people like that. I think that to me is amazing part of the gifts. You know, I always enjoy working that way and doing remote viewing to find stuff or find people or, you know, understanding. It just makes more sense and it's quite rewarding. So thank you for letting me try it. I mean, I'm glad I could help. So
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. I thank you so much for that. And people,
are you going to read the next part on the thread? So I wrote him back and I said, so when are you going to have the most awesome medium ever on your show?
Yes. Yeah, so when are you going to have
Thanksgiving? Okay, here I am.
I said, so how about this next week? Yeah. So how about we do it this week? So, right. Because I'm all about paying it back. Right. I wanted to have you on. I wanted to have you on and tell people about this amazing gift and tell people about your gifts and tell people about how you're available and how they too can.
On any social media platform, right? From Blue Sky on up, you know, everywhere, Twitter, whatever, you can find me by Scott Rourke, Scotty Rourke, anything like that. I'm on every platform. So feel free to come out and find me. Facebook is probably the easiest, and I have two of them, so watch out. The one that has more friends is my main one, so I have two. So, because not everybody can get on the meme, you know, so you can only do 5,000, I guess, or something like that. So,
and if you're confused as to where to, you can find them. You can also go on the net and go to spookyscotty.com, right? Your website, right? Yeah, and you can contact
scottyrourke.com. Scott Rourke, if y'all need to Spooky Scott's page, yeah.
Yep, and
that's kind of funny. I don't think we ever talked about that. How did I start out with Spooky Scotty?
Yeah, because how did you?
When I started this, and it was back in the 2000s, early 2000s, late 90s. I'm watching Derek Acor and everybody on TV, you know, doing all this, and I said, "Man, I can do this. I mean, I do that all the time." And then I met Derek and had him on my radio show. And he told me that I was a medium and I'd be stronger than him and his spirit guide. And sure enough, I have been. So it's pretty great. But so when I went off and decided to call myself a medium, I lost a lot of friends again. But I wanted to go into the thing to say, mediumship is not scary. I mean, it's not, it shouldn't be. It should be, if I'm the spookiest thing you'll ever meet, then so be it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's why I call myself Spooky Scott, because then I'm the spookiest thing that you met. And I'm not scared. So.
No. Yeah.
But see, that's what it was. I was trying to make it kind of like funny. So people could realize that because you have these gifts, because you have the understanding or you have the feelings or you have the thoughts, it's not something weird. It's something normal. You know, so please feel comfortable with it and use your gifts And see, I told Tim before too that he had gifts, and he admitted it on the air when he was talking about this. He saw me, and the name came to him. Yeah. What is that? That's clairvoyance.
Maybe a little.
Sorry, buddy, it is.
Okay. Maybe a little.
Sorry, it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I mean, I'm always one that always believes that everybody has gifts, and it's just how much you accept them, how much are you willing to work with them, I mean, are you willing to use them? It's kind of like baseball. Everyone plays baseball. Everybody. Mm-hmm. Except for the Twins, but never mind.
Well, you're not wrong there, but yeah.
Sorry. After the Packers won on Sunday, I'm all happy here. So anyway, because I'm in Wisconsin, Tim's in.
You're just going to pile on my teams, aren't you? But go ahead.
Of course I am. Why shouldn't I? But I mean, but everybody plays baseball in some forms. I mean, some people play in bar league. Some people play in the minor league. Some people play on the Cubs and Twins and Brewers and you name it, they play it. And then some people, A-Rod and Babe Ruth and stuff, get to the Hall of Fame. And then they're really good. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that I'm really good. I just say that I'm in the upper echelons because I do the work, I practice, and I give readings, and I go out and do the work, help people in their houses, help people find things, help find missing people. So I accepted it, and the more I work it, the better I get. And I think it's something like that you can train.
Well, I'll tell you this much, my friend. I know you're really good.
Thank you.
I know.
Thank you very much.
I know
that means a ton. That means a ton for me. So
I know that much. I and I'm not just speaking from this experience. I'm speaking from other experiences. I know time and time again that you come through and you show not just myself but other people that you're deadly accurate. I think is the way to put it.
I know some of my team, because also if you want to come and find us, we're the Mad City Ghostbusters, by the way. We have two actors. We have a good time with that. But we also investigate under that. We kind of changed our group into a cosplay group that does the Mad City and does the Ghostbusting lookalikes, mm-hmm. and then the actual mediumship and going out to people's houses and helping. So we kind of split our group into two. Everybody seems to do both, but you know, it's okay. You don't have to do both. We got some guys that just do the cosplay stuff. So, you know, it's kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the more we can help individuals, the more we can help kids in need, you know, cause we do a lot of charity work for children's hospitals, Make a Wish, those type of things. The more we can help each individual live this life better. That's the important thing.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. And you're bringing it right back around to today, which is Thanksgiving. And I know there's some people today who may be spending it with the family that they were born into, some people that are spending it with a family that they went out and found, and some people that may be spending it alone. But no matter how you're spending it today, I know that we here consider everybody who listens to this show as our family, and we're grateful for them. And today I wanted to carry forth an attitude of gratitude. I wanted to express my gratitude to you and wanted to thank you as part of my family, my extended family, and wanted to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. And thank you so much for being part of that family.
I just want everybody to know that they're loved by the universe. They're loved by the people on the other side. So don't forget that. I mean, you might think you're alone, but you're not. You have so many relatives and people that have passed on before you that are with you. Just today, just feel them, feel that understanding, remember them, and keep that in your brain. That'll help you know that you're always watched, because they're always around you. That's what I wanted to tell everybody that today, that you need to know that they're there with you. And it's great. So reach out to them, feel them. And the first message you get from them, that's the message. So whatever they say, that's the message. So accept that message and move on. And don't think, oh, did they really say that? Yes, they really said that. Because it's always the first message. The second message, your active mind kicks in. So it's not as clear and good. But your first message is always spirit coming to you because you're not thinking of anything. All of a sudden, boom, it comes. That's the message. So
that's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah. Yeah, today of all days would be a great day to look for that message, I think. Most of
Yeah, I agree. I think you have to today. If you're with other people, you know, enjoy the time you have with them because it's never long. And we've talked about this in the past here, even that I wasn't even here the last 2 years because all the strokes and bypasses I had to have, that I look at every day as amazing. Mm-hmm. And I am blessed because I was supposed to be here for a reason, and I am here for a reason. Mm-hmm. And that's to show the love and show the understanding to everybody that we aren't alone, that this is a universe that is just, we're all part of it. I mean, you talk to scientists, they will tell you that we're all made of the stuff of the universe. Yeah, we are. Mm-hmm. And I always say we can't be the only ones because then we would be the mistake of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. Very true.
Are you a mistake? No, we're made for our purpose. So that's why there's others out there. So.
Right. Right. So let's talk about future days. Let's talk about,
we got a big one. We're going to be together.
That's right. Coming up in June, the date isn't quite released yet by Potographs for Pooches, but coming up in June, there is a Potographs for Pooches coming back to the Palmer House Hotel. We'll release that date when it's official, but Tim and Lauren Miley will be organizing that and coming back. And I hear that you're going to be part of this as well.
I'm going to be a part of it, and I hear you're going to be a part of it.
I believe I am. Yes, I've been asked. So.
And I'm going to pray that this time I don't fall down the stairs.
I know you won't. I know for a fact you won't. So there you go.
Oh, that was so funny.
I didn't think it was funny. I wasn't laughing.
As you're coming down the stairs, waving to everyone downstairs, you're going like this. Next thing you know, you're gone because I was down on the ground. I was just worried about the Ecto REM pod than anything else.
I was worried about you. I'm a little bit of a. I'm a little bit of an amateur conspiracy theorist here in my spare time. I honestly thought maybe you might have been pushed.
I'm not putting that out of it.
Just saying.
Because how I went and how fast I went was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they knew exactly the one spot on my body to where to impact me that would just take me down. And I went down.
Yeah, you didn't look like you just fell. There's falling and then there's accelerating, and you looked like you were accelerated. Yeah.
I have to agree, and I haven't put that out there, but I've thought about it since that moment.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big one to, because I don't know, I blame myself mostly, you know, but Gail, who was with me, you know, Gail Burkle, who was always with me, she and I, we've talked about that. We both thought too. So
yeah,
she goes, cause it happened. It happened like that. Like somebody just went.
Yeah.
And I went,
well, this time it's not going to happen.
No, no, no. I'm letting everyone else carry the bags and I'm going to walk with 2 minutes on the rail.
There you go. Even if I got to give you one of my canes, you're going to be, we're going to guarantee that.
I'm having my own this time. So.
Okay. All right.
I have one of those Louisville Slugger baseball canes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The kids got it for me when we were down doing Mid-South.
Yeah.
With Keith Age.
Yep.
And we were down there and we went to the tour and my son and my two sons bought it for me for Father's Day. So I was like, that was kind of cool.
Have you ever stepped in the batting cage down there? The Louisville Slugger? Yeah. Did you make contact with any of those?
I did
two times. Otherwise I was swinging wild.
Yeah. And
I play baseball, but I swung wild and I only hit two of them, two pitches. Yeah, but
that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. That was a good time. But
it was.
Yeah, I have that cane, so that's kind of nice too because I can swing it. If I'm in a bad section of the town, I'm swinging it. So not only is it a cane, it's also my protection.
There you go. Absolutely. All right. So Potographs for Pooches in June. Again, we'll keep people informed on how you can join Scotty and I at the Palmer along with Tim and Lauren Miley. And I have a good word that Jessica Freeberg's going to join us too. So we'll have a full full slate with us at the Palmer. So, but with that, my friend, I wanted to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. I wanted to have you on today. I wanted to let people know that they could get a hold of you and tell people again how they can get a hold of you.
I guess the best way you can do is SpookyScotty.com or ScottyRourke.com. Go there. Is my stuff, but my Facebook page is probably the best, Scotty Rourke. Anything Scotty Rourke is me. So that's the nice thing. I'm the only Scotty Rourke in the world. So if you have the same last name, R-O-R-E-K, then you are my family.
There you go.
Seriously, that's kind of weird, isn't it? But it's cool.
That is. That's very cool. That's very cool. All right, folks. Well, that will do it, Scotty. I want to thank you so much for being on the program today and a very happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
I have to go get my pie, so I got to get going.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yep, you got to dig in. That's for sure. That's for sure. Folks, that's going to do it for this week. Again, I want to thank Scotty Rourke for being on the program today. I want to thank John Gertz for being on the program as well. The link for John's book is in the description of this program. And again, I want to thank all of you, my entire family, for being with me today on Thanksgiving. And I am eternally grateful for you as well for continuing to tune in day in and day out and supporting this program, writing me emails, letting me know how much you enjoy Mally and Jess and Travis and Beer City Bruiser, how much you enjoy the news programs, the interviews, how much you enjoy the content, how much you follow us day in and day out. When you rate and review us, how much you enjoy the show. Everything that you pour into us, we hope to pour back to you. The fact of the matter is that you keep us going, is that you continue to give us energy and good energy at that. And you don't know how much you fuel us. And we love you for it. We appreciate you for it. And we continue to try to bring you the best in paranormal programming. That's what we want to do here. And we'll continue to do so for quite some time. So again, on this day of Thanksgiving, we are eternally grateful to you, and we appreciate you. So with that, we continue on forward into December, and boy, do we have a December for you. We have some great programming coming your way, and we can't wait to bring it to you. So we're going to turn the page to December. We're going to continue forward, and if you have something that you want to bring forward to us, it's real simple. Send me an email, tim@darknessradio.com. This weekend, be sure to include someone who is elderly or disabled in your festivities. You've got Black Friday coming up, of course, tomorrow. If you still go to the stores, be sure to ask one of those people, elderly or disabled, if you can grab something for them, a bargain if they need it. I know there's online shopping, but not everybody goes online, especially if they're elderly or disabled. Be a light in someone's darkness this weekend. Be sure to help out where you can. That'll do it, folks. We'll see you next week for the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Four seasons greetings to you all.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details. More seasons, greetings to you all.